This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
All right, this is James, and welcome to an out and about episode of superfastbusiness.com. Today, I'm out of the office. I'm actually right by the sea near the Pacific Ocean down at Manly, and I have a special guest with me. His name is Yarrow Starek. Welcome, Yarrow.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me. I feel very relaxed right now.
Yeah, well, I don't know what could be more relaxed than sitting beside the Pacific Ocean, and we're eating some yogurt, which I'll post a picture right near this podcast. They sell the yogurt by the weight, which is fascinating. I've taken a few people as an experiment, and so far, you actually have weighed in at less than anyone I've ever taken.
I'm proud of that.
And I think my mum's weigh-in was about twice as much as mine. I think we can easily spot whose eyes are bigger than their belly at a place like that. Well, she's actually quite small, but to her credit, she did eat everything she ordered. So we're talking about the laptop lifestyle today, which is one of the reasons we're out and about. The fact is, we were going to be out and about anyway, and I thought it'd be a good idea to bring the recorder. So I'd be interested in hearing from you, Yara, about your ideas around laptop lifestyle. What does it actually mean, and how does it work?
Well, in my research studies of what people want to change in their life, it's primarily a dislike for their job, mm-hmm. and dislike for having a job, period.
Right.
So not wanting to work at all, and then exchanging that time that they put into their work to do one of two things, and maybe both. Traveling.
Yep.
So that was a huge one. Everyone wants to be somewhere else because they don't like where they are. Some sort of passion that's in their life, which could be their family, yep. could be their loved one, could be a hobby, music. It could be making money. It could be running their business. I'm pretty sure, James, you would choose that probably as your main passion for a lot of the time.
And well, I do like starting and growing businesses. It's definitely a passion.
Like, you don't want to spend 8 hours playing guitar, do you?
Well, I'm not a very good guitar player, but I could see that if I was a fanatical guitar player, I could easily spend 8 hours playing it. Like my son, he will play until he falls asleep holding the guitar, and he's so passionate about it, and it shines through in the work he's doing with his band. And same with my daughter with her horses. She would ride two horses every day.
So if they didn't have to go to school, that's what they would choose to spend a lot of their time on.
But I think, you know what's interesting, I think they will engineer their lives around their passion, because they're far less indoctrinated into the society that tells us we have to go to school than
that's
to university.
It
is my fault. But, you know, I'm very proud of what my kids have been up to. What's your passion? Is it still inline rollerblading?
It's never been inline rollerblading. I think you just said double negative, right?
Is it inline? Yeah. Oh, okay. I got pulled up before once for saying roller skating. Apparently, they're different.
You know what? I'm a roller skater at heart.
Are you?
Ultimately,
I did in the 70s.
In the rink. That's what skating is about to me. But it's not, you know, it's a bit limited. We're going round and round circles where we could be skating up and down this lovely bike path that's in front of us on the ocean here, which...
Well, I just consider it like a runway for guest contributors to our podcast.
We'll just grab people.
We're actually just eavesdropping in a little... It's fascinating what people talk about on their walk around where we are here at Manly. I've heard a lot of conversations, and I'd have to agree, most people appear to be unhappy with their life.
Yeah. So that is the laptop lifestyle. In my case, to answer your question, I love writing, and I actually like writing to my blog. Ideally, if I had my dream business, which I'm working towards, to be honest, is all that back-end stuff, all that product selling, funnel development that you have to do in an information marketing business, I want that to be a tuned machine that never needs any more tuning, which might be a bit of a pipe dream, but at least get it to the point where it's...
You want to automate it.
Fairly automated, yep. So that every time I do something like this,
yep.
or write a blog post, or do a video, it goes to some people... Read this, listen to this, like what I say and what I do, and go back to my site and enter that machine. And some of them become customers, and I make a living. But I have the luxury of just exploring my creativity just for the sake of the interest. No need to directly do it for money. Like, I don't have to do it for money. It does make me money. Well,
generally, that's like a really horrible motive for having to do something for the money.
Sure is.
When I encounter a student who wants me to help them grow their business, if they're too desperate or only interested in what they need to make their money, I know they're not really focused on solving customers' problems. And generally, and quite often, it's not aligned with a passion either, and they hate it.
I kind of tie that into, if you even go further back here, it's the reason why, I'm not sure I want to get into the subject matter, but I think it's the reason why we have a lot of religions in the world, is a sense of desperation. When things are really bad in your life, you do look for outside powers.
I think people want to be comforted, feeling that there's something out there watching over them and stuff.
And if, okay, so Australia, we have a lot of our basic needs met, but we might not like what we need to do to make a living, or maybe we don't make very much money and it's very tight. So that's the desperation that sets in. It's nice to have the luxury of a lack of pressure to decide what you actually want to do with your life, because that can be a big decision, and you don't want to make it with a money monkey on your back saying you've got to earn this amount. So to do something you don't like.
It's kind of like that saying, you know, people are buying things with money they don't have to impress people they don't like and stuff.
Yeah.
So, all right, we've sort of touched on how you might make money from this laptop lifestyle. You might want to drive traffic to something, and it's like my site at superfastbusiness.com. I publish content most days, and there's a products button on that site. And the products button leads to a problem solver, which is help me, my website's crap, or I need more traffic, or I want to learn about internet marketing. And they click on those things and they end up at a product. And that's how that site works. In your case, have you considered publishing a book if you love writing so much?
I have. As most published authors will know, it's not the best path to a large income.
Isn't the byproduct really about becoming more of an authority and getting bigger speaking gigs and higher conversions?
I don't want my book to be a lead generator purely. Again, it's like the motivation.
You want to do it as a creative artist.
I want to write a book that touches people, and I don't need to make money from it. I don't need to get clients from it. In fact, probably when I hit my 40s, I will go.
That's a while yet still.
I've got 7 years. Yeah. So I will then sit down and go, what do I actually want to write a book about? Because I don't write fiction and I don't write dialogue right now. I write a blog and I teach and I tell stories from my own life and other people's lives. But it's not, for me, the closest example I think I can find the perfect execution of a book is Tim Ferriss with the 4-Hour Workweek, because that put him on the map as a super famous kind of person in his market, as well as even beyond his market. Bestseller status, it's on the bookshelves, every bookshop I go to. He doesn't sell anything on the back of it, though. He has a blog and he has money.
I think he also works in the startup world and makes
investments.
That's how
he makes his money now, yeah.
And I've had the good pleasure of almost being run over by him and witnessing him smash a car into a tree.
Oh, really? When was that?
It was at a military training camp he went to for a bit of fun in the United States. He's a fun guy. I've got a picture of him somewhere. But I think this is an interesting topic. A lot of people think they're going to get rich making a book. And as someone said, I don't know, I'd love to attribute this quote. Most people think they've got a book in them and that's exactly where it should stay. Now, I'm interested.
Ouch, James. Crushing hopes and dreams.
I'm not talking about you, Yara, of course. I do have some fond memories of when I still had a job and I was listening to your podcast. So you've been doing this audio thing for a long time.
You know what? I started exactly like what we're doing right now.
Exactly. Wheel turns full circle.
My first podcast was sitting, talking to a device like we are doing right now, sitting on the edge of the Brisbane River, talking about something to do with internet marketing.
So if you had to rate the Brisbane River versus the Pacific
Ocean. That's not fair.
Come on.
Not fair. It's like comparing a bathtub to a swimming pool, you know?
Overseas listeners probably aren't appreciating our extreme humor here. So your podcasts, I remember listening to those from my office. I'd listen to them on my laptop. Do you still podcast?
Of course I do.
You do, but you've also started video blogging now, and you've got a yarrow.tv.
Yes.
YARO.TV. I'll do the plug for you. How's that?
Thank you.
Is that courteous?
Yeah.
And
superfastbusiness.com.
So tell me, why have you started doing videos?
Well, you know what, James? I've had a YouTube channel since 2007, so I haven't actually just started doing videos.
But we've all done a few videos and then not done them, and then started again. Yeah. I actually started 3 years before last year when I started again in earnest.
Right.
And I think I wasn't ready for it.
I'll be honest, I think his technology has gotten a lot better. Like, I did a bunch of videos in 2008 when I traveled around the world, but that was with a Vado pre-HD, so it wasn't the greatest, you know, a little handy cam thing. And it's blurry, the audio is not great. Now, you know, your iPhone 5 does amazing quality video, and you got that with you wherever you go, so there's no excuse from a technology standpoint. But I think, personally, the reason why I'm doing more video, search engines, YouTube videos are ranking ridiculously well, and you kind of get left behind, I think, in that area if you don't.
So have you think video. It's important for business owners to pay attention to?
I think that, and I think especially if you're a personal branding person, so you are the brand, there's a connection that you can only get with visual.
They see you. Yeah. I mean, I remember watching your stand-up desk video, and I went out and bought one because it was just that final trigger.
Affiliate link for that.
Well, I don't
IKEA,
know. You're not going to make a lot from IKEA. I mean, it's sort of like you get punished if you buy something from IKEA because then you have to spend a week assembling it. unless you've got kids. And my daughter can assemble anything from IKEA, luckily. No, I managed to find the stand-up desk of all stand-up desks. It had a stainless steel top, which I use as a whiteboard.
Ready-built too, wasn't it, that one?
Pre-built. Yeah. And it was the last of the line, and it was on floor clearance. So I literally picked it up, put it in my car, and it was half price.
Nice.
It was like the ultimate.
And you can see a video of that stand-up desk on yarrow.tv, actually. Some more pluggage here.
There you go. You can see what I've got written. Did we catch a screen?
I did a B-roll.
A B-roll of what's written on my stand-up desk, I'm sure. In fact, I would say that...
I think it's in Chinese.
Well, the graphic, though, has been responsible for me making a lot of money.
There's a little Easter egg hint there.
A little Easter egg hint. You can't buy that sort of curiosity, Yarrow. So you've got the audios you're doing, you've got videos, and you still blog regularly at your blog, which is called?
Entrepreneur's Journey. But I tell people to Google Yarrow. That's a much easier way to find it.
I can't spell it, and it's hyphenated.
Y-A-R-O. I'm Madonna, Oprah, Rihanna, whatever you want. I'm Yarrow.
So. Getting down with Yarrow. So before soon, we'll be busting out a few beats.
B-roll.
What sort of tips have you got for someone who is in a job, listening to this, thinking, okay, Yarrow, you sound pretty famous, and you get to travel, and you...
Can someone sound famous?
Well, you just said you're like Rihanna.
Oh, okay. Right.
Okay, so this is your own positioning here. Uh-huh. This is your fault. Look at that paddleboarder. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, great for audio content, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Look at that amazing paddleboard. Amazing paddleboard.
Yeah, I can't.
splish, splash.
But the thing is, we're reaching people who can't watch a video or read something right now. Probably they're walking the dog or walking on the beach. That's the cool thing about audio.
I hope you're doing that right now.
Yes. So what can people do to start getting into this laptop lifestyle? From your point of view, have you got sort of some ideas people could implement?
No, not really.
Useless.
You haven't had that answer.
I was kind of expecting it. It is the Holy Grail question, isn't it?
It is, and everyone answers it differently. I know, James, you would have talked about this countless times, but I really think making the intention and actioning that intention is obviously step one.
So it might be building up enough dissatisfaction with what they're doing that they take action.
You know, whatever motive. I had a chat with a female friend of mine on Facebook last night. She's young. She's 23. She's in the world of fashion. She's got a creative industries and fashion degree, and she's been working in fashion retail for most of her adult life. And she's struggling with her own label. She's, you know, not nowhere close to making a living from her own label, which would be what she really wants to do. And she's sort of realizing that maybe that's a pipe dream. Won't even talk about that. But she was coming to me saying she writes a blog. She writes a fashion blog, and she has a minor in journalism, so she's got some background there too. So, and there's people that make money with fashion blogs. There are people out there who are living, and probably then some, off of a fashion blog. And I was saying to her, she asked me this question. She said to me, Yarrow, do you think I can make a living from a fashion blog? And my answer to that question was, maybe, to be absolutely honest. I said, do you have the work ethic and the intention to do it? Because you can you can get excited and tell people, yes, you just work every day, write blog posts every day, go out there and tell people about your work.
You have to put in the coffee shop somewhere. Got to do it from a coffee shop.
Well, if it's a laptop lifestyle, yes, certainly. Coffee shop, yep. By the beach, you know, whatever. Stand-up desk is really good, well, too.
You know, it's funny because I don't think I've worked from a coffee shop often at all in the last 8 years.
So you're missing out.
I've almost always worked from home. And when I had a job, I worked in my lunch hour or whatever on the laptop. But I do work from airport lounges, hotels.
You're a traveler.
Little less glamorous than the coffee shop. But I've really got to get out a little more, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, it helps I haven't got a family, so, you know.
Yeah, I've had other things going on. But yeah. So this girl, what's she going to do?
To be honest, I don't know what she's going to do. I'm always skeptical if people haven't shown the work ethic in prior aspects of their life, whether just saying, you know, go do this and they'll do it, because it's a consistency thing. If you don't have consistency.
Well, I remember when I was reading about hiring that people tend to repeat what they've done in the past. It was like 80-something% of the time, 82. I'll just make something up, 82%.
That sounds true.
Maybe it was 78. Okay. Anyway, it was a high amount, enough for me to pay a lot of attention to historical behavior. So that's a good indicator. So listener, you could think about what have you done in the past that could give you the confidence that you could do this. Mm-hmm. Let's talk sort of deliverables here. How often would you open up your computer and type stuff?
As in blog content or in general? Because obviously, you know, every day we're doing the tweets.
Well, you're a dichotomy of content here. You got you like writing, but you do audios and videos.
Yeah.
I don't like writing.
I love writing.
I do not write. If I'm typing something, 9 times out of 10, it's coming via email, because that's where I can't really escape it. But it will also, a lot of the time, have come from me dictating it into the Mac app. So the majority of my written content is a transcription of a video and audio.
All right.
So someone will be transcribing this audio. It saved me having to think about it and type it.
Sure. And I will not sound nearly as succinct on this audio as I will when I write content. So.
But are you one of those old, you know, you draft it and then you go back and edit, which is recommended by some other people like Ed Dale. He says, do your first run,
just blast
unfiltered,
it out there. Yeah.
And then go back and clean it up.
I'm kind of that way. I'm not, it's blogging, so I'm not getting, you know, it's not like one time only. It's one article I will publish of many a year. So I will sit down at a cafe shop, open up the laptop. I can write 1,000 words in half an hour to an hour, depending on the subject. So, you know, 2-hour session, you will finish a fairly solid blog article, and I will read it once before I publish it. You know, I'll go in and add the links, add pictures, add video, whatever needs to go with it. Click publish. And currently I do that once a week to maintain a dialogue with my audience. And I'll send it to my newsletter as well so that people, you know, get something.
When I do actually write a post, which is pretty rare, I'll usually publish and then I go back and edit it several times. It's like when I look at the history, it's like 20 different versions. Like, I'll wait for the emails to come back. Oh, you got a typo and blah, blah, blah. I'm more of a, you know, ready, fire, aim. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. Once a week. Now, I think you were ahead of your time, Yara, because you were doing epic blog posts before there was a famous post about epic blog posts.
This is true. Yeah. I'd never liked short. I mean, I can do short, but I don't know. Every topic is in depth. It's like us talking for 5 minutes, 2 minutes. It's probably why I actually kind of struggle with video sometimes, because 2 minutes is supposed to be the attention span for the average video watcher. And like, you can't teach much in 2 minutes.
You can put in some B-rolls and extend it a little, stretch it a bit.
A little bit, but we're not talking an hour. Like, that's what I like about a podcast interview. And I've always done hour-long podcast interviews too, which is,
I think people hang longer with audio. So I have a very popular podcast called thinkactget.com, and we're up to, I think, 15 or 16 episodes.
With your buddy, right?
With Ezra. Ezra Firestone, who is hilarious and can eat 27 bananas. Just
quietly.
That's
a claim to fame,
eh? I found that out. We talk about that level of stuff on that show. But I've noticed the statistics. People are listening to that thing, and it's a 42-minute episode, generally, 40-something minutes. We get over 3,000 people listen to that. It's a new podcast, and it's been bouncing on number one on the business iTunes in Australia for the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And people will stay with an audio. But when I look at video, in Wistia or YouTube analytics, there's a dramatic tail off, even with training content, where the people have a huge return on investment. After that first 15, 20 minutes, they're gone. So a Hollywood director told me, never make any video more than 12 minutes, which is great since that's the Canon's limit.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, I think the main reason that is most people take their audio content on the run and they don't take their video content in the car.
I agree. They've filtered out other things. Yeah. They can listen to it in the car. They can listen to it when they're walking. In fact, I know people who time their walks. In fact, yesterday I spat some coffee out on my keyboard. I was reading a post in my forum, Fast Web Formula, and Dave had gone up to get some milk. And he forgot his wallet. He had that horrible old shit moment when he was at the checkout and he had no wallet, but he was okay because he was able to call his wife. And while his wife was coming, he tucked into a few episodes of Think, Act, Get and Freedom Ocean. And by the time she got there, he had his fill of podcasts. So, you know, podcasts are great little in-between things you can do when you're in transit or traveling. Now, I listen to a few podcasts and you get sort of addicted to them.
I almost feel now if there's a period of time where I'm traveling without something in my ears, you feel like I'm being less efficient than I could be right now. You know,
I still have that Brian Tracy thing. Yes. You know, your car is a mobile university or
yeah,
whatever.
Listen to tapes.
Tapes.
I do think like there's people richer than me right now, and they're richer because they listen to more stuff using their time than I do. And I'm like,
but also, you know, we were joking about this before. I have
Sheffrin, here we go.
Yeah, that's it. You know, there is this famous video of Rich Sheffrin with oxygen shoved up his nostrils on a treadmill, screaming through Kindles that he's fed into there by ripping the spines off. And I think, you know, like
you're just jealous, James. I think
I'm not jealous. No, I would rather.
Have you had an oxygen high?
I just life is my high, yeah. Okay, but I like to just sit there in the leather chair and just quietly read a book slowly without oxygen or a treadmill. I think to digest content peacefully is one of the great pleasures.
I skate, as we mentioned before, yep. And
that's inline skating.
I do rollerblade outside because roller skating outside is kind of hard, and it's my cardio. And I take that's when I do my podcast or I do music. And
do you wear Lycra?
I try and avoid Lycra, and I have no helmets or knee pads or wrist guards. So I'm trying to
living
hard
on the
to
edge.
Be cool. It
living
really
on
is,
the
you know?
Edge.
It's amazing. You walk down the street with a skateboard under your arm, you're cool. You put a pair of rollerblades on your feet, you're a nerd. You know, it's not fair. It's what it is. Discrimination. But anyway, I do exercise like Rich does while I listen to audio content, and I listen at 2 to 3 times speed.
Yep.
So if you're doing that with us right now, you know, I applaud you. That's a great way to get through all the rambling that James does in his audio.
I'm filling it with just useless information.
Yeah, so I've got my little app on my HTC phone, and I use Audible for audiobooks. I'm actually going through Brian Tracy's, Eat the Frog one, right now for the first
time. My favorite was Psychology of Selling.
Right.
The Psychology of Selling with Brian Tracy. I listened to that 100 times when I was a salesperson, and I would say that was the biggest influence in my early sales career, up there with Spin Selling. Right. So I had the audio tapes on Full Cycle and the Spin Selling book with Dog-Eared. Those two things got me extreme success in selling.
But not on the treadmill, right?
Not on the treadmill.
No.
In fact, I lost about 7 kilos in my first month selling cars because I was running up and down the ramp to the up and down car park, and I worked without any days off.
Probably missing a few meals in there.
My boss was a hard ass. He didn't want to give me a day off for the birth of my son.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
And I was 24, and I worked so hard I thought I was going to die. So I do appreciate those moments of solitude and just kicking back, because I feel like I've found the edge, and I was lucky I didn't cross over it, the working edge.
I don't know how necessary it is to have read every single book in existence, which I think is not the goal for a person like Rich, but I do notice there's some uber successful people who are extremely well read. Like I remember hearing Dr. DeMartini, he's read 400,000 books, claim. I don't know how real that is, but...
Well, I think the average CEO in America reads 50 books a year. It's one a week.
So you're doing one a week, which is slow if you go by a Rich Sheffrin
But it's fast by the, I'd say...
That's fast by my standards.
No, by the adult population. I read some statistic.
One like, a year?
No. After school, people just don't read a book after that. They read TV Week and...
Yeah,
and the Sunday paper with the horse racing. So I think if you read any business books, you're in this
the curve.
Massive minority. And if you read a few, I mean, I read a lot. I've like my iPad's jammed up with Kindles to the limit. I've got at least 1,000 books in my bookshelf, which I've read slowly. I read all the words out loud. But I do seem to absorb it, and as part of my role as facilitating a mastermind, I have to be knowledgeable.
You do.
How important is it for someone who's going to be a laptop lifestyle person to be knowledgeable about their craft?
Well, it
seems to me there's a few people out there suggesting that anyone can be an expert, they just have to publish stuff.
Who says that?
I'm not going to name names. It's not important.
Okay.
But the important thing is the question. Do you need to be knowledgeable to be able to make money from a blog?
Well, knowledgeable is pretty subjective, isn't it? There's always someone you know more than another person does. So, yeah, everyone's knowledgeable, whether it's mandatory. I don't think it's mandatory. We have to define value.
Maybe it depends on the role. If you're going to be a reporter, then you don't really need to know about the subject.
Well, look at the biggest blogs in the world. I think The Verge right now is certainly up there in possibly the top 10, certainly in tech. Or any of them, Mashable, TechCrunch, Boing Boing, all the biggest blogs, which are mostly magazine format blogs. So multiple authors, 10 to 20 to 30 to 40, 50 posts a day, bite-sized content, certainly not epic content like you're talking about.
Yeah.
Those articles, it's journalism. It's going out there reporting.
Finding stories.
Yeah. And sure, that's knowledge. Those journalists know more than the person. That's why a person comes to those blogs.
But, so that's interesting, the 30 to 50 posts a day, because some people would say, oh, how much content should I put out? You know, is one a day too many?
Yeah.
Because their readers can't keep up with it. I know, and even in my case, a lot of my subscribers have got my emails in their inbox, but they don't necessarily go and look at it that day.
No.
Because one a day is quite a lot compared to other people in my industry.
I really think timing nowadays has a lot to do with it. Like those guys who do, well, those entities that do 30 to 40 to 50 a day, they're corporate magazine style businesses,
a Huffington Post type things.
Yeah, they employ people full time.
Is that the business model you think is the pinnacle?
That is not laptop lifestyle.
No,
because the journalist is working a full time hour in an office. Or
so. What's your laptop lifestyle pinnacle?
Well,
what's the benchmark?
What I love right now, this is the way I would going forward. I will teach everyone to do this. Do find something that you want to be knowledgeable about, and maybe you already are because you sit there and you play the guitar for 8 hours a day.
Is this like your friend Albor's? Has he got a car blog?
Yeah, but that one's gone towards the magazine model because it made sense for them to do that.
Did he have a crossover between your style and that style, or was always trying to be that?
It's not a teaching blog. It's a news blog.
So you think a teaching blog is good
think for an
like,
individual,
yep.
A teaching blog is definitely more realistic to make a full-time living from than a news blog, because a news blog by definition needs to have everyday current news, which is probably more than one post a day if you want to compete nowadays. So that's when you have either a fanatic, one guy who is spending 12 hours a day scouring the web, summarizing news and reposting 10 to 12 posts a day, which is it's a model that works.
Well, my own course, Own the Race course, is more or less a news blogging thing, but I'd say there's a blend of education.
Speaking of race courses,
there's a beautiful little puppy.
Greyhound racing.
So, in fact, I think that's a whippet just quietly. Looks very similar to a greyhound.
Okay, I wouldn't know. I'm a cat person. So.
I'm a dog person. That's a whippet. So, interesting though, if you were reading more dog blogs, you'd know the difference.
Yeah, if I was a dog fanatic, that's a perfect niche for a laptop lifestyle.
Oh, well, one of our associates out there gets 300,000 views a month to his dog blog.
That's awesome.
And it's getting some serious traction.
They're making some full-time income from that.
Well, they're doing that transition where they get key sponsors and stuff. So if you get enough eyeballs, you've got options, right?
300,000, I'd hope.
So we've made a really important distinction here about deciding what type of blog you want. So I've ended up with a blog that's educational. Like, this is obviously just amazing educational content we're covering here. And then I have news elements where I update customers for my services of what's new and what's changed. And I put out generally one news piece per week for each category. And
I bet you teach in every single piece of news.
Pretty much, yeah. Edutainment or
it's always a tip.
Teaching in your news.
Yeah, well, that's not a news. That's a teaching. That's not a news blog. It's a teaching blog. You might attach news to it, but it's still teaching.
The thing that's sexy about news is that it implies people keep going to come back.
Yes.
And
it's new. That all-powerful word new is in news.
New. So 65% of my visitors come back on my site.
Right.
So it's got an audience. And new is one of the best words to use in a headline, right?
Yeah, you don't definitely better than old.
And how to? I have a lot of how to posts. Like if you searched how to on my blog, it'll pull up the bulk of them. I take a real problem or a real challenge that someone's having and stick how to in front of it and answer it with a video. There's another tip. Well, the sun's coming down. It's starting to cool off a bit, so I think we're going to wrap up soon. Give us some final parting wisdom that makes people remember this podcast, Yarrow. What's important to remember? You know, notice we haven't talked about what kind of specs you need for your laptop, because I think a lot of people get confused about all the stuff that doesn't really matter.
Well, if you happen to be an Apple blog writer, then you might care about that stuff. But
yeah, well, if that's your topic,
yes,
you would. Are you a Apple or are you a PC guy, Aaron?
Well, I'm a bit of a walking contradiction. I use an Apple. I've got a HTC phone at the moment. I probably will get an iPhone next, but I don't know. I sit on the fence. That's what I do. Like, whatever I find is solving my problems best, and
whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, Apple have done such a better job at creating a stable operating environment than PC has. How could you not go with Apple? But I've got my coding friends. They would never go with Apple. They do their C and their C# and their PHP and all that stuff, and they use PCs.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about with all that stuff.
Yeah, see? Well, there you go.
So,
but no, that's not my words of parting wisdom.
Well, there you go. And I want to thank you for putting out that content you did 7 or 8 years ago when I was starting out online and you were starting out. But
what stuck with you back then, James? You remember a certain interview or a certain
piece of advice? I remember you talking about you had a writing business of some sort.
Proofreading back then.
Yeah. Proofreading, and that and you interviewed people, and you had little audio widgets on your site that you could play and interact with and sort of leave comments. And
yeah, I did.
And you had long posts and you had long hair. You had big hair. You were a big hair guy. But you had a very personal brand that, so I remember it. I remember my key influence. But I do credit you with the pillar post, which is the pre-epic post name for that.
That's my claim to fame. The pillar article. Pillar content.
I'm really paying attention to which pages on my site convert the best. And then I make sure that I closely follow those topics for follow-ups or do multi-parts. And now
with Office Autopilot now, right? You're doing some fun stuff with that?
I do some cool stuff with that. But I'm putting feature banners on my site for like the three profit tips. And I'll get the three profit videos I did and make a feature page that leads to those three pages. And then I put a banner leading to that summary page. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So a reader will see that on the front of my site. Click into the three-part series without having to opt in, and then they can follow each of those three videos. So I'm looking at increasing page views and retention and giving more value up front. My whole business model is massive value for free with my blog and podcasts and videos, and then they move to recurring solutions with services and info products.
Done.
All right.
Business model 101, right there.
Business model 101.
On that point, you did bring up something that I wanted to test and some of my friends have been doing great guns with, was basically micro reports with opt-in boxes, actually. So
yep.
Blog content, article, and here's the action checklist you can download to follow through with what I just taught you in this blog post. Enter your name or enter your email, and I'll send you, or I'll give you the report right now.
It's a great idea, and a friend of mine, Dan Norris, has put out a piece on content optimization lately. Mm-hmm. He has a site called Informly, inform.ly, and he introduces this idea of having the most relevant opt-in related specifically to what is on that page. So different opt-ins all over your site that are hyper-targeted. It does make sense.
It does. I can imagine my blog would be one giant opt-in for every micro article I write, which probably would quadruple my opt-ins for my list. You know,
if you did that, if you made your opt-in targeted to that post, if you had a post dedicated to Apple laptops, and then your opt-in is find out the three ways I optimize my Apple laptop.
And it's like two-page reports you could give away.
Well, you could do it with one email. That with Office Autopilot, which we both use, you could have that tag laptop, and when it comes in, it would say, "Oh, laptop, I'll send this sequence." Mm-hmm. And I've just done this for a customer. Is I'm recognizing if they've been there before or not and sending a different follow-up as the first message. Mm. It's so cool. Mm. So I think that's a great tip.
I think I'm building the funnel, but when I turn back to front-end marketing, I want to up the leads. So
bottom line, folks, is that whatever you're doing now with your opt-ins, you can probably double or quadruple it. And I did that. Just that little yellow thing that flies up when you scroll down on my site is a lead machine. It just puts it into hyperspace on the basis that someone's engaged enough to scroll down. Mm. Now it's a good time to show them the opt-in. Mm. So it's a behavioral triggered thing. It's called
the new form of pop-up.
Scroll trigger box.
Yeah. They so many of those keep coming and going.
Well, yeah, it's great to catch up. Thank you for coming along, and hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Thanks for having
me. Come and visit
James.
Me at Manly and have another yogurt.
I like the yogurt. It didn't taste like yogurt, but yeah, it was great. But thank you for having me, James.
My pleasure, and the whole of Manly thanks you.
Thank you, Manly.
See ya.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.